Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV. Still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation, sometimes even the great debate. But to be either of those, you have to join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. You dial us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line, and remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero. The number is 44208-601-4555. Or you can SMS the show, and the best of those will come up here on the comment wall. And the number for that is 44780008066. Or you can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. You can even tweet at @comment_presstv. Well, the hypocrites were out in force in London today. $10 billion they pledged, though it's worth remembering that only 43% of the last round of money that was pledged was ever produced. It's my estimation that half of the $10 billion that was pledged today at the London conference we'll be very lucky to see. And I mention that because a very significant number of the donors are people who don't give a damn about Syrian refugees. It was pledged by people who have created the Syrian refugees. It was pledged by people who are spending many more billions than they pledged today actually destroying Syria. And we'll see some drone footage later in the show, which is quite unbelievable, almost like computer-generated graphics. Watch out for that. The reality is the Turkish regime that was at the conference in London today is a primary reason why there are any Syrian refugees at all. Erdogan, whose prime minister was there today, is one of the most important destroyers of Syria and thus producers of millions of Syrian refugees. I feel very bad about that because I used to think so highly of him. Even worse, I used to speak so highly of him. I thought that he'd manage the transition from Islamist politics into the ability to run an economy. I thought that as an Islamist and not a Turkish nationalist, that he'd be able to solve the Kurdish problem in Turkey. Because an Islamist believes that the state that you belong to is much less important than the religion to which you adhere. I believed him when he said that under him, Turkey would have no problems with the neighbors. And now it has problems with all the neighbors. It's massacring the Kurdish people. And it has caused the murder and mayhem in Syria. Saudi Arabia, look, if Saudi Arabia cared about Syrian refugees, they'd all be living in air-conditioned marquee tents in Saudi Arabia. But none of them are in Saudi Arabia. They're freezing in tents in Jordan and in Lebanon, or in the ruins and the rubble of their homes, destroyed by Saudi Arabian money, Saudi-backed fanatics. The kind of fanatics who are never done telling us how much they love the Prophet, peace be upon him, but are ready to bomb and try to destroy the tomb of the Prophet's family. Lady Zainab's tomb in Damascus, they're trying to destroy it, trying to shatter it, and the precious bones that lie within it. What kind of Islam is that? What kind of Muslims are they? And what kind of hypocrites line up to promise but not pay for Syrian refugees whilst they're busy producing more? So the question tonight is, who doesn't want peace in Syria? One of our greatest callers is in New York and on the line, Eric Dreitzer. Eric, welcome to the show.
George, thank you for having me back.
Always great to hear you. Go ahead.
Well, this question is, I think, of paramount importance as we look at this so-called peace talk process taking place in Geneva. On the one hand, we have the Syrian government, the legitimately internationally recognized Syrian government, which has said publicly that they want to participate in these talks, though they are skeptical of what sort of outcome might come out of it. And then on the other side, of course, we have the so-called High Negotiation Council, which is universally recognized, even in the West, as proxies of Saudi Arabia and of the other Gulf monarchies and more broadly of the West. And in this process, we have to ask ourselves, what do the so-called High Negotiation Council really want? Because they've walked out of talks, they said they wouldn't participate, then they would, then they wouldn't again. And why are they doing this? It's not because they don't want to be a part of the process. They do. They understand the reality that's happening on the battlefield, how much they have lost in the last 6 months, how much the Russian engagement directly in Syria has changed the calculus on the ground. They understand all of that, and they need the talks. What they cannot accept is coming to the talks from a position of weakness. And so what they are trying to do is stalling for time in this process in order to reinvigorate the jihadi elements that are fighting on the ground in Syria, in order potentially to deconstruct Syria, as the Brookings Institution has called it, as the think tanks here in the West have been advocating for quite a long time. This is the fundamental process that we're seeing playing out here, and this is precisely what the Russians have been saying, why they are unwilling to accept certain terrorist elements from having a seat at the table. The Russians, as well as their Syrian allies, understand perfectly that in this process there needs to be a dual-track system in place. Talks on the one hand, and the war continues on the other. Both of these things are happening at the same time because the Russians, for their part, understand they don't want to be involved in Syria in perpetuity. They don't want this to go on for years and years and years, but they aren't going to allow Saudi Arabia and Turkey and Israel and the United States and all of the rest of them to destroy the somewhat imperfect but stable nation of Syria, to allow these jihadis to fly out of Syria 24 hours drive away from Russia's border. There are a lot of factors at play, but the one thing we need to remember is the West and the terrorists that they sponsor and the states that are within that system cannot allow real peace to come to Syria unless it benefits them.
Well, that's brilliantly encapsulated, Eric. I don't know if you can see the pictures I'm looking at, these drone pictures of the destruction in Syria. It is, I mean, frankly, unbelievable. It looks like a computer game, but sadly, it is entirely real. Eric, you're in New York. I've got to ask you this. Do the people in New York know that the United States and its closest ally in the region, Saudi Arabia, is now in bed and in for hundreds of millions of dollars with Al-Qaeda? Do they understand that in New York?
Difficult question to answer, because the extent to which people even pay attention to international issues is sadly lacking. I think that ultimately those who have at least some sense of what's going on in the region understand at least to some degree the nature of the war, but they don't understand the difference between a so-called rebel and a terrorist. They don't understand the affiliations. They don't understand the factions, and it's not simply because they're ignorant. It is also because there is a concerted propaganda campaign waged by the corporate media, the establishment, the political elites, and all of the rest of them to whitewash the nature of the factions that the United States and its allies have been supporting. And interestingly enough, George, it is hidden in plain sight. I would point people's attention to 2012, June of 2012, New York Times headline, CIA said to steer arms to Syrian rebels. Reuters, 2012, terrorist training base in Adana, Turkey, near the NATO base in Incirlik, Washington Post, 2012. I could point to 100 other examples of information that trickles out even within the corporate media system, but it is buried under an avalanche of propaganda. And within this sort of propaganda matrix, within this maelstrom of disinformation, people are supposed to learn how to evaluate the situation. It is frankly impossible unless you disabuse yourself of the notion of American exceptionalism, of benevolence, and you begin to realize the fundamental reality of 21st century imperialism and how imperialism is operating. Moreover, I just want to add one other point here, and I know it's not about who's responsible for Syria, but this rise of fascist scapegoating that we're seeing in Europe against refugees from the Middle East, not exclusively from Syria, Afghanistan, Somalia, many other countries in the region, and all throughout the what we might call global South, all of these people are being scapegoated by these various fascist elements that are now rearing their ugly head all throughout Europe. I saw the video from Dover. I saw the clashes. I've seen it in Germany. I've seen what's happened in France. This is very clear what is actually happening and why it is happening and how it is being manipulated. And those people, particularly those who claim to be defenders of Syria, defenders of Palestine, defenders of the marginalized and oppressed peoples, who then turn around and buy into the scapegoating and buy into the fascist propaganda and call Syrian refugees cowards and all of these other things that I'm hearing people say in social media and in mainstream media, all of this must be denounced because it plays directly into the hands of the imperialists who control the media system and those who are waging all of these wars. It is in their interests to scapegoat and to raise xenophobia and racism. This is neocolonialism in action, and it must be addressed, and it must be beaten back on all fronts.
Well, they don't control you, Eric, nor me, and nor Press TV. Thanks for a brilliant call. Let's go to Iraq, Erbil, where Joe Lauria, a journalist, is on the line. Joe, welcome.
Thank you, George. Thank you for having
me. Who doesn't want peace in Syria?
Well, there's a long list, George. Anybody basically who wants to overthrow Assad in Damascus, a long group of extremists. And you can start with the Islamic State. Of course, they want to take Damascus, and they'd go on from there. Then there's al-Nusra Front, al-Qaeda, Abar al-Sham, the coalition, Jaish al-Islam. All of them want to take Damascus, and they can only do that by more war. So peace is not of any interest to them. And then, of course, you have Erdogan in Turkey, as you were talking about earlier. He wants to take out the Syrian Kurds, who are allied with the PKK. He's pretending to be fighting the Islamic State, and as we know now, he's actually supporting them because his other aim is to overthrow Assad as well. And certainly Saudi Arabia, as you were talking about earlier, has backed many of these extremist groups, but we can't leave out the United States. They're still calling for Assad's overthrow, and they're training rebels with Saudi money and arms, as the New York Times reported even last week, and a pretty extraordinary story. And
it's a rerun, Joe. I don't know if you're old enough, but it's a rerun of the Nicaraguan story in the 1980s, where Saudi money was used by America to train the most bloodthirsty murderers, called the Contras. It's history repeating itself.
Yeah, well, it's the same empire, and they're pursuing their interests in the same way. And of course, they don't learn from this. And as Eric was pointing out, the American people are pretty clueless about this. And that's because of the corporate media, how it covers these issues.
Yeah, the journalists are not clueless, though, Joe. The New York Times contains a lot of very clever people. So they're obviously covering this truth up.
Well, I could tell you something. I could tell you a direct experience. I pitched a story to a major American newspaper about the Defense Intelligence Agency document of August 2012 that was declassified earlier last year, which says clearly that the U.S., the Gulf, and Turkey were trying to set up a Salafist principality in eastern Syria to pressure Assad, and that they could join with similar extremists on the Iraqi side of the border and create an Islamic State. That's the word that's actually used in August 2012, 2 years before the Islamic State actually came into being. And I pitched that story twice to editors at a very major newspaper, and it was totally denied. And that has not appeared in any corporate newspaper. And that's simply how this propaganda, if you want to call it, works. Just leave out omission is how it works. They leave out various facts. The other side of the story is not told, the Russian side, the Syrian side, without taking sides, just laying it out for the reader, the complex interests that are conflicting in an international situation. You don't get the other side. And when there's something very critical of American foreign policy, devastating to the narrative of the war on terror, this DIA document, which showed the U.S. was actually supporting the creation of what became the Islamic State, and we don't know to what extent they still have any influence over it, if it's become a Frankenstein, that does not appear in the newspaper. That is a conscious decision of editors. I would not know whether how many other reporters like me try to push stories like that and have it denied. Obviously, the editors make the decisions. So at the editorial and at the higher levels of corporate media, you're not going to read these stories, and the American people don't know the other side of the story. This is the issue here, unfortunately.
Wonderfully eloquent, Joe. Thanks very much for joining us. Take care there. Samuel is in France. He wants to talk on this subject. Samuel, welcome.
Yeah, welcome, Josh. How are you?
By the grace of God, I'm good, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's always knowing that the Western country does not want peace in any other the other country. We saw in Iraq when Colin Powell and George Bush lied that Iraq, Saddam Hussein had weapon of mass destruction. And we saw the destruction of Iraq. We saw in Libya when the West went there and said Gaddafi was killing his people. And now we've seen the complete destruction and breakdown of Libya. This country was one of the best countries in Africa. And
they're about to invade Libya. Did you know that, Samuel?
Yeah.
It's in the newspapers today. The British,
exactly.
The French, the Americans are weighing up where and when to send soldiers and invade Libya. What could go wrong?
You see, those people, they are now created a mess. I listened to John Kerry all the time. It is now time for the Western world to fight and settle Libya's problem. But they are already destroyed Libya as they destroyed Iraq. Now today we saw America has set for 500 million U.S. dollars to treat what it called moderate rebels. And when this thing started in Syria, France sent 40 feet container tons of weapons to what they call Free Syrian Rebels. And these are the Free Syrian Rebels today turned into Al-Qaeda and other affiliate groups. And this is the problem we see in Syria. It has become worse. Thank God for Russia's intervention that has now changed things on the ground. Obama does not have children or families in Syria. François Hollande in France does not have children or family in Syria. David Cameron does not have children or family in Syria. It is the Syrian people that are suffering today. Now they are talking about $10 billion. America has $500 million United States dollars to train and arm Syrian rebels. Why they couldn't settle the problems when it started from the beginning?
Exactly. Samuel, brilliant call. Thanks for that. Nasir is in London. Let's hear from him. Nasir.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Welcome.
Let me tell you that in the Balkan, when they had the war in the Balkan, it didn't take them so long to stop it. But in the end, they stopped it straight away. It didn't take them long. Now, there is two who benefit from this war. Those who sell arms and Western imperialists and Israel, of course. I don't know why people did not mention Israel. Now, if you look around the map, this illegal state, whoever has got a border with them, are unstable. If you look Egypt, if you look Syria, if you look Jordan, if you look... So those, you know, they depend, you know, they need to be destroyed so they can live in peaceful, you know, they can live for longer, you know, without any fear. But there are a lot of, you know, the Gulf as well, which is, you know, belong to them, the same clan again. And we always see the same people who get involved in promoting terrorism. And now when you look at, when people tell you, says about Islamic State, those are Al-Qaeda in different suits. They don't represent Islam for... you know, those people are mercenaries paid by the Western imperialists. Thank you.
Well, I don't think that's the whole story. It may be a part of it. There's a very large number of foreign extremists, head cutting, throat cutting, hand chopping, crucifying, mass murdering, blaspheming, sacrilegious fanatics who are destroying Syria, and they're not doing it because someone's giving them wages. They're doing it because they are possessed of a demonic ideology. The attempt to destroy Lady Zainab's shrine, for example. What kind of madness is involved when people who are never tired telling us how much they love and support the Prophet Muhammad are trying to destroy the tomb of the family of the Prophet Muhammad? That just doesn't even compute with me. You know, if I could get one to call up tonight, I'd like them to answer that question. These people, and I don't know what percentage of those that caused that destruction in Damascus that you just saw on the screen, they're not mercenaries. Mercenaries don't blow themselves up and kill themselves. They don't eviscerate their entire being to kill 6 or 8 or 10 civilians. They don't do this and to the people that used to live in that now dead city for money. It would be easy if that were the case, because all we'd need to do is give them more money to go home, to lay down their arms. But that's not how it works, Nasir. The destruction, the madness, the blasphemy, the blaspheming against God by the mutilation of helpless prisoners in their hands. These are not the actions of mercenaries. They're the actions of demons. This is Shaitan in action, in my opinion. Now, the list of people who don't want peace in Syria is as long as my arm. It starts, of course, with the fanatics, but it doesn't end there. Let's hear from Abdul in Nigeria. Abdul, go ahead. Abdul?
Hello. I'm on the line.
You're on the air, brother. Go ahead.
Hello, Jim. How are you? Where's your sign?
I'm sorry, it's too bad a line, Abdul. I can't hear you, and I don't think...
I'm from Nigeria.
Yeah, that's better. Go ahead.
I want to comment on the issue of a proxy war between Saudi Arabia and Iran.
Yeah.
I feel this war isn't war of Saudi Arabia. It was with the influence of the Western world. And then why Saudi Arabia doesn't want to solve this problem politically?
No, I'm sorry, Abdul. You've got your television on, and that's part of the problem. Maybe we'll get back to you in the second half of the show. The list starts with Al-Qaeda and with ISIS and the other fanatic groups, dozens, scores, maybe hundreds of them. They're all the same. They're all head choppers. They're all desecrators, blasphemers. They're all murderers and torturers. Whatever you call them, whatever brand they're currently wearing on their sleeve. But it stretches all the way to London. Hammond, the British foreign minister, said just yesterday that Russia was helping ISIS. The last time I looked, Russia is doing its best to destroy ISIS. It is expending its money and the blood of its service personnel. It is fighting a last-ditch effort to defeat ISIS. It is the government of Hammond and Cameron who are supporting ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and the others. And it's open. This is not an allegation by me. The group that is based in Saudi Arabia, the so-called high, so-called negotiating, so-called council, are led by Al-Qaeda. They're not ISIS. They're only Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda are the moderates. They tried to tell us. How does that play in New York? If the people in New York knew that their government was giving money and weapons to Al-Qaeda, what I don't understand is what they think would happen if Al-Qaeda were to win. I'll be right back, God willing, 4 minutes from now. Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV. Still, the voice of the voiceless. Tonight, we're debating who doesn't want peace in Syria. Well, how long have you got? Let's go to our first caller in Botswana, Vladimir, who is on the line from Africa. No, we've lost him momentarily, but I really wanted to hear from a Vladimir in Botswana. Let's see. Which country we go to next. We're getting around the world. Here we go to Nigeria. Cyril is in Nigeria. Cyril, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, I want to just comment on the case, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yes, go on. You're on the air. The floor is yours.
Yeah, my suspect is that the Americans are the one who doesn't want peace in Syria. And why do I say so?
I agree.
It's because Americans are the ones who are supposed to look into the case to bring down and bring peace to the whole nation and bring peace to Syria. But they joined hands and began rioting against the Syrians. So it's my main and key point why I say that Americans are the ones who does not want peace for Syria.
Well, I agree, Cyril, but let me ask this question. I alluded to it before the break.
Yes,
if the Syrian regime falls, who comes to power? Al-Qaeda, ISIS come to power in a Mediterranean state. Next door, by the way, to their pet, Israel. What does anyone imagine other than Libya, writ large, writ 10 times as large, does anyone expect to emerge from such an eventuality, Cyril? Ah, what a pity. I've lost him. But I've got a wise young man in Peterhead.
Yes.
Robert, the floor is yours. Robert in Peterhead in Scotland.
Good evening. How are you?
By the grace, I'm great. Go ahead.
It's good to hear from you again, George. So the whole thing about who would profit most from the Syrian regime falling, I mean, or even who would be most against peace, I think the answer is quite clearly obvious. The number one profiteers from this war are the Gulf states, like Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Bahrain and all these nations which have funneled millions upon millions of dollars into the pockets and the bank accounts of Daesh, into Jabhat al-Nusra, into Ahrar al-Sham's bank accounts, so they can purchase guns, bombs, missiles, chemical weapons. And they're the ones that are profiting most from this war. And even then, if Bashar al-Assad falls, then who will replace him, as you quite clearly said? If the rebels manage to get into power, then...
Well, how could they not, Robert? Who else could?
Exactly.
They're the ones with the guns. If the Syrian regime were to be defeated, only they could come to power.
Exactly. Which I think is the reason why there must be some form of coalition government. That's the only way that will probably end this war. I mean, it can. The two sides must come to an agreement. Otherwise, Syria is not. Nothing will have changed.
The problem, Robert, is there aren't two sides. There's an internal patriotic opposition still inside the country for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the Syrian regime could negotiate a decent settlement with them. But it wouldn't be recognized by Al-Qaeda and by mm-hmm. ISIS and those who are funding them and arming them. So the war would go on.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Yeah, that is definitely the problem, George. The whole thing about Syria is, I mean, it's essentially become the gold mine for... It's become the gold mine for arms profiteers, for arms smugglers, for those that want to maybe smuggle ancient relics. And this whole situation, it's just... Meanwhile, while people are being bombed, murdered, and as well being drowned in the Mediterranean Sea, the arms profiteers and the oil barons and all these heads of the Gulf states, the corrupt kings and the sheikhs, they're laughing all the way to the bank, carrying massive amounts of money. And, like, these people lack any sort of humanity whatsoever. There are little children that are drowning in the Mediterranean because of what they have done.
And these people don't give a damn about that. If Saudi Arabia cared about Syria, cared about its people, cared about its refugees, it could put them all up in a good hotel in the warmth of Arabia, instead of leaving them freezing to death in Lebanon and in Jordan. Robert, thanks as always for your wisdom. Let's go to Joe Catron in New York City, Palestine solidarity activist he is. Joe, welcome.
Thank you, George. It's great to be with you.
And you, sir. Go ahead.
Well, unfortunately, numerous parties benefit from the unfolding tragedy in Syria, and many of them are doing whatever they can to prolong it. We've seen Israel's direct military aid to the most extreme elements on the ground, with their forces essentially operating field hospitals for Al-Nusra Front, Al-Qaeda's Syrian affiliate in the occupied Golan Heights. Last month, Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Yaalon outright stated that he preferred ISIS to its major antagonists.
Yes, he said that,
in the Syrian conflict.
Yes.
Absolutely. And this bloody, catastrophic status quo benefits Israel in a number of ways. At an international level, it has essentially frozen the issue of Israel's occupation of Palestine and its ongoing innumerable crimes against the Palestinian people, as the world remains transfixed instead on Syria. It has also advanced Israel's designs on the Syrian Golan Heights, which of course it has occupied since 1967. In November, we heard Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu go so far as to ask that the United States Barack Obama administration recognize this occupied Syrian territory as part of Israel. And this is a position the United States, along with every other world power, has consistently rejected since 1967. Perhaps one of the few things the United States government has gotten right. And finally, the pitched struggle inside Syria has allowed Israel to strike at will against those who challenge it there, with the Syrian and Arab forces too preoccupied with the internal conflict to respond as decisively as they otherwise might. But, of course, Israel has not stood alone in its efforts to prolong the bloodshed in Syria. We've seen major powers in the Gulf, led by Saudi Arabia, to say nothing of Turkey, pouring arms and fighters into the country, often benefiting the most violent and sectarian factions, up to and including ISIS. And Western powers, including the United States, have supported these efforts with weapons and training programs of their own, presumably to aid their Israeli, Gulf, and Turkish allies. Ultimately, George, Syria is a tragedy with many creators, it's no particular secret who they are. These international flows of fighters, weapons, and other aid are not difficult
Indeed.
To trace.
Let me just take you up on one or two points, Joe. A brilliant summary. Is you use the word prolong. Do you think that's the game? To keep the war going, bleeding, weakening, destroying what was, at least on paper, a confrontation state? Or do they wish for the victory of these extremists? And if they do, how do you think they propose to deal with such a successful extremist power coming into Damascus?
I think it's a mix of approaches, and all of these powers may not necessarily share the same one. Certainly, Israel sees it as advantageous to keep the conflict going as long as it can, both because it benefits it in the ways I've mentioned, and it strikes repeated blows against those it sees as its adversaries in the region, forcing them to concentrate their efforts on Syria and letting Israel, leaving it home free, so to speak. Others, I think, are more focused on an end game, on installing a government that is more to their liking in Damascus. This is certainly much more the case with the Gulf regimes and presumably Turkey as well.
That wouldn't, of course, solve anything, because if they were, God forbid, to succeed in overthrowing the government in Damascus, and they put some stooges, some exiled, suited and booted stooges in power, do you think ISIS and Al-Qaeda and these other fanatic factions would accept that, that they gave all the blood, they did all the fighting, and some guy who's lived out the war in Copenhagen takes the power? That could never happen. Secondly, the Kurdish people, who have fought valiantly and heroically and at great cost, they're not going to go back into their box because Erdogan has managed to put some stooges in power. The only people who could actually come to power, take power in Damascus, are the extremist factions, of whom we're told Al-Qaeda are among the more moderate. That's how fanatic they are. So either they've got a deal with these fanatics and they think that those fanatics will honor that deal, or we're going to have a Libya situation writ 10 times larger on the Mediterranean in Syria, as well as the one we've got in Libya.
Absolutely, and I think that's the scenario that everyone is considering now. It's very unlikely, for all the reasons that you mentioned, that any kind of a coherent national government will be able to replace the one currently in Damascus. If Damascus falls, the absolute...
Oh, what a pity we lost
the
Joe.
Most
go ahead. Go on, Joe.
The only predictable outcome that anyone can see is a Libya-type situation with various factions controlling different parts of the country and continuing to battle among themselves.
Just imagine how many refugees there would be then, Joe.
Absolutely.
Joe Catron in New York. Brilliant talk. Thanks very much. Let's go to Kenya. Ismail is there on the line. Ismail, welcome.
Thank you very much, and God bless you all.
Thank you.
And in fact, well, in my opinion, I believe the problem in Syria is caused by the Western, leading by U.S., and all they want is that Russia get out of Syria. And according to me, that will never happen. And there's nothing like Sunni-Shia civil war. As we are Sunnis, we never had Shias, and Shias and Sunnis are brothers. And in Islam, there is no hatred. We don't hate Christians. We don't hate Jewish, except the Jewish-Christian alliance, who came to destroy believe the lives, the holy lives of the people, and who came to capture the Holy Land, the Palestine. And in fact, all they want is that Bashar led Russia out of Syria.
Well, that's not going well, Ismail. Thanks for the call. Yael is in London. Yael, welcome. Yael?
Hello?
Yes, Yael, you're welcome. You're on the air.
Hello, I can hear.
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, good evening. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you well. Thank you. You're on the air.
The main concern for me as an Israeli is that had been Israel's dream to dismantle a Syria, not a particular regime necessarily, but the whole country, to fragment it, and that would enable Israel to further its plan to ethnic cleanse and transfer Palestinians out of Palestine, out of the West Bank, further than they already been transferred in 1948 in the Nakba. And I think that would be one of the consequences of the civil war in Syria.
They also think, Yael, don't they, that it would vindicate somehow their own confessional state. They claim to be the Jewish state, although of course many Jews don't agree with that, and most of the people who do agree with it are not Jews. But it would mean that they could, as they did try in Lebanon, to have a series of sectarian and confessional statelets. And so one outcome that they could prefer in Syria is a Sunni state and a Shia state and a Druze state and a Kurdish state and so on. In other words, to balkanize the area into a patchwork quilt of sectarian confessional states. What do you think of that?
Oh, definitely. That's how things are going to go. Yeah, including with the involvement of Turkey. There is, as I said, there will be fragmentation, and there is already fragmentation of Syria. We obviously all traumatized and seeing the horrendous situation of the refugees, but it is aimed to depopulate Syria. Israel really, really would be benefiting from the depopulation of Syria and having yet another Arab countries dismantled as a potential force ever to challenge its domination of the Middle East.
Well, you're correct, I'm certain about that. The bigger question, though, is why Arabs and Muslims can't see that, why they do the dirty work for that, why they are struggling so hard to do what Israel wants them to do. That's difficult for me to understand, Yael.
For me, not at all, because you have a regime like Saudi Arabia. They're equally interested in destroying Syria.
Yeah.
They equally see Syria as the enemy, and their interest and plans are the same as Israel. They're equally against the Palestinians as well.
Well, of course, I know that the regimes share that interest and that perspective. But of course, it's not the regimes that's doing the dying and the killing in Syria. It's individual Arabs and individual Muslims who've come from all over the world to rip Syria to shreds, to destroy it, like a computer-generated graphic, who are cutting off people's heads. It's individual Arabs and individual Muslims who are not Arabs who are doing this, not only in Syria, but also in Iraq, not only in Syria and Iraq, but also in Libya. Not only in Libya, but also in Nigeria and in Yemen. And I could go on. Yael, thanks for the call. Vladimir is back on the line from Botswana. I just must talk to him. Vladimir, welcome.
Hi, George.
Good to hear from you. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, George. The problem in Syria, actually, is basically catalyzed by the Western countries. More so, this is just the second phase of what they've been doing in the world. It all started in 1967, when this was done in Palestine, and none of their partners ever cared. And now they are trying to increase the problem that they have been doing to the Palestine to other states like Libya, Syria. And if you look out and see the root cause of this, you will find that the Western countries, they are fighting a battle that is because they don't have what the Western country needs, and the countries that have what they need is those that they can use conflicts for them to benefit out of that conflict. That's even if you look at the amount of ammunition and where they are made from. Most of them, they are made from America. And if not
and
America,
Britain.
It's Great Britain.
And Britain. Britain,
yes,
Britain in the last 12 months have
yes.
sold almost £5 billion worth of weapons to Saudi Arabia, almost all of which has gone either to Syria,
yes,
into the hands of people we are supposedly at war with, or into Yemen to destroy the poorest country in the Arab world.
Definitely. And what worries most in the world, the very countries that they are talking about peace, they are the one that are bringing conflicts to small countries so that there will never be peace in this world. Look at Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was the first Al-Qaeda commander came from America. And after that, Al-Qaeda came into this world and to destabilize peace. And take, for example, what is happening now in Afghanistan. The issue in Afghanistan is no longer that of the war of they are fighting terrorists. Now they are even killing innocent civilians. And people are clapping hands for the American drones for doing that.
And ISIS are fighting the Taliban to see who can come to power when the foreigners leave.
And George, I want to tell you something, George.
Yes.
Whether they like it or not, there will never be peace in Syria. And it's going to be the worst war that we have ever seen. You can think about the war between Nicaragua, the war between, you can name them. But that is going to be the war. You can think about Vietnam. That is going to be the worst war. That is going to make people to be homeless, to be without homes. People and America will and United States of United States of America, and United Kingdom, they are going to be the beneficiary through Saudi Arabia and its allies towards this.
I honestly, I understand where you're coming from, and I suspect we come from the same route, you and I, Vladimir. I understand what you're saying, but I don't believe that that is true. The biggest danger facing London right now is a Paris-style terrorist attack from these kind of people, maybe even literally these people. Somebody mentioned earlier Frankenstein and his monster. We have created a monster of monstrous proportions, voracious, spattered in blood, its teeth razor sharp, looking to devour the very people who helped to create it. You can continue the discussion on Twitter at @comment_PressTV. It's been marvelous.
Hello, if you just comment, put your name and a picture with that number. And just make sure that your television volume is set to 0. So
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You'll be directly put through this. You need your phone number and then we'll be back.
Comment, 0.